Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
It is time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Here's your host of Supply Chain Now Radio, Scott Luton, the Executive Vice President with Apex Atlanta. Apex is the leading industry association dedicated to end-to-end supply chain management. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, thanks, Katie. Good to be here once again on a beautiful Monday morning. Well, kind of overcast Monday morning right here in the Supply Chain City. And speaking of the Supply Chain City, let's throw a hashtag in there for Ben Harris's benefit.
That's right.
Hashtag Supply Chain City. That's going to be the focus today. We are honored to be speaking with two leaders from companies here based in the Metro Atlanta area that are doing big things in the industry. And looking forward to diving into some really interesting subject matter with Tandria Bellamy and Gail Moore. We'll introduce them in just a second. But got to give a big shout out to my co-hosts today, or my two talented co-hosts today. We have Ben Harris, Director of Supply Chain Ecosystem Expansion with the Metro Atlanta Chamber. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, as always, Scott.
Glad to have you back. And Will Haraway, Founder and Lead Evangelist with Backbeat Marketing. Hey, Will.
Hey, how you doing, Scott?
Glad to have you back.
Yeah, thank you for that. CEO is just too fancy a title for me.
I like lead evangelist. That's good.
Yeah. I agree. We're going to get baptized here later today, right?
That's right.
There we go.
All right.
So looking forward to hearing from you both in just a minute on top things to know in supply chain now. But first, let's welcome today's featured guest that comes with a championship belt. Tandria Bellamy, VP of Industrial Engineering at UPS Global Logistics and Distribution. Tandria is also a member of the Apex Atlanta Executive Advisory Board. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad you are here.
Happy to be here.
And then we also have Gail Moore, co-owner and manager of Custom Plastics and More, a plastic fabricator located in Winston, Georgia. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning.
So one neat thing. We enjoyed seeing both Tandria and Gail at VEO Atlanta this past Saturday for our day of service. Apex Atlanta partnered with Women in Manufacturing, the Georgia chapter, and the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance. We had about 40 folks come out, put a lot of hard work and hours in, right, into cleaning up the campus of this 200-bed veteran shelter. And to learn more, we're passionate about serving the veteran community. To learn more about the VEO, check out veohero.org. But very appreciative of your support and contributions, Tandria and Gail. So we look forward to diving more into interviewing both of you here shortly. But first, let's kick things off like we always do with some insight on some of the top things to know in supply chain now. Not everything, right?
That's right.
At least
just some, just some high flying things that we flagged and grabbed for you.
And
some homegrown.
Some homegrown.
Some more global. Yep.
And we are going to be tackling four today. It varies. Sometimes we do 17, sometimes we do two or three.
That's right.
Today we've got four. First, we're going to lead off with Ben Harris, again with the Metro Atlanta Chamber, the mayor of the hashtag Supply Chain City.
Right.
So, Ben, tell us what's going on in the world of online grocery delivery.
Online grocery. What a exciting topic. We've heard a lot about this recently with stuff with Whole Foods, obviously, and their acquisition with Amazon. So that's definitely been a hot topic in the market. But actually, it's not. We're going to shift a little bit, not talk about Whole Foods and Amazon necessarily. We'll talk about some of the companies that are actually trying to defend themselves from this right now. So, yeah, U.S. supermarket giant Kroger Company will sell its products in China on Alibaba Group's holdings website, their Tmall. It's a global e-commerce site they have. And Kroger says the site is launching this week with an initial product offering that includes dietary supplements and private label products, mostly kind of organic and natural foods, which I think a lot of us are eating more of these days, it seems like. And the deal marks Kroger's fifth e-commerce initiative in the past 3 months there. So definitely something they are looking more into with more stuff in the works. And the actions come as Walmart ramps up its own new international strategy, while online heavyweight Amazon extends, of course, its own push we just talked about into U.S. grocery business as well. So the agreement will also give Alibaba a new weapon in China's fiercely competitive online grocery market, where Walmart has its own tie-up with rival JD.com. Mm. Has anybody heard of JD.com in here?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is... It should be on everybody's radar. So just let you know, if you hadn't talked about it or heard about it, definitely something to put on your radar. So as we get more into online, I mean, it is between them and Alibaba, it's basically the Amazon of that part of the world. So
okay, JD.com.
Yeah.
Adding it to the radar here.
They are heavily into automation.
Yes, they are.
Okay. So my wife, it's not the international side of grocery delivery, but she uses Aldi's home service and has been a loyal convert for over a year now. And it saved us three hours or so. We got three kids. A trip to the grocery store is never simple.
I was about to say, that's almost every day now.
we live at Aldi and at Kroger in Walton County in Loganville, which is one of the busiest Krogers. But fascinating to see kind of the grocery industry take, you know, get Amazonized or you know, get the whole e-commerce side of grocery business. So so let's talk about from groceries to home improvement supplies. So give us an update on one of Gartner's top 25 supply chains, the Home Depot.
Here's our homegrown update here.
There we go.
Homegrown, like obviously based in the supply chain city. Also, one of the chair people of my Supply Chain Leadership Council at the Metro Atlanta Chamber. Yeah, so the Home Depot is moving goods faster to keep up with growing consumer demand. So not a lot of surprise there. However, you know, the home improvement retailer reported strong improvement in a robust market. So as we talk about some of the things going on in the market right now, it seems like we're just finishing a job today. Mm. Actually at home, we actually did a remodel of our bathroom.
Okay.
So it's a
hot market. Served as a project manager there?
we'll say that I was the JC, the general contractor. Okay. There for this one. But yeah, I mean, it's a hot market right now for home improvement, whether you're doing it yourself, like Home Depot, or on the contractor side, too. I mean, it's crazy out there how much business is in the area. So to keep up with that consumer demand, Home Depot's making some big bets when it comes to supply chain there. They've actually earlier this year announced a $1 billion, I think it's $1.5 mm-hmm. billion investment, actually, in their supply chain improvement project. So, Scott, I think you were actually at one of the RDCs the other day, actually.
Yeah, so the Home Depot, of course, reverse logistics and handling returns is such a big deal in retail. The Home Depot uses three facilities to process all of those returns, and one of them is right here in McDonough, Georgia. And we were out there with Apex Atlanta and the Reverse Logistics Association, Tony Skirota, and had a great time. Heard a lot about reverse logistics, recycling, return processing. We toured the facility, and it was a very great learning opportunity. So lots and lots, amazing, hundreds of trucks of full of returns that facility processes each week, not month. Y'all ready for me to say month right now? That's each week. So lots of work, hard work going on down in McDonough.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you going down there. Obviously, I'd been to one of their facilities before, but it had been some time. It was not the McDonough facility. That was a different one. But just to brag on them a little bit more, they've actually seen a 31% improvement in second quarter net profit and an 8.4% gain in revenue. And this is all while we're talking about, you talk about a tightening market when it comes to freight capacity there.
Yep.
And also, you know, what happens when you have, you know, freight capacity go down and it's tightened there. Rates go up.
Yep.
And so when that goes up, that's a major cost for them. So it's pretty remarkable of what they've done in the face, you know, despite all these headwinds, let's call them, in the market. So
definitely. And of course, that big investment that you mentioned, the Home Depot, is focused on offering same day delivery, I believe, throughout the 48 contiguous states there in the U.S. So they're getting close.
They are.
I think.
They are. It seems like every time I hear Mark Holyfield talk, you know, the next time he gives his presentation, there's slight reiterations to it about how much improvement they're making, and also their investment in that area too. So it's inspiring, frankly.
And I bet UPS is helping to make that happen too.
Absolutely.
So we were talking about that facility down in McDonough. Lots of trucks going in and out of there each week. So Will Haraway with Backbeat Marketing, tell us what's going on in the trucking world.
For sure. And just as Ben alluded to it, the trucking industry is booming. I mean, and it's because of the economy to the point that loads are getting harder and harder to book. Distribution channels that carry these goods to retailers, to factories, to consumers, to us, you know, they're struggling to keep up with this, with the pace. And, you know, shipping costs are rising. The freight volumes are outpacing the supply of loads that can be booked. So some companies are resetting their supply chain expectations, some to the better, as Ben just mentioned, but they're adjusting their earning expectations, especially in the food industry. Okay, they're adjusting their expectations downward, though, because last week, Dean Foods, one of the largest milk suppliers, they cut their full-year earnings outlook because they can't move their goods the way they were doing it last year. Mm-hmm. You know, and then right along with that, U.S. Foods, Kellogg, Del Monte, they all, in their earnings calls this past couple weeks, they all commented that logistics costs weighed in on their earnings and are pushing them downwards. So, pardon me, this capacity, you know, it's not going away, and there's some reasons for that we'll get in a little bit, but that's an opportunity for the Uber for trucking industry, like our friends Amari, who was here at our last episode from Sudu. Let's try it again, Scott. What you got?
Sudu.
There it is. He's going to love that.
Amari Ruff, CEO and founder of Sudu, was here. Sudu was here with us August, earlier in August.
And his, you know, Sudu, they match loads, you know, digitally match loads. So that is hotter than ever because of the scarcity of these loads. So, and a case in point, and this is, Amari, if you're listening, I'm telling you, I'm sure you noticed, but Cargomatic, who was one of the very first of the, they were founded in 2013 as this stuff was just starting to be a reality. And they actually had a bit of a public fall a couple years ago. They laid off a third of its staff. They laid off their chief operating officer, you know, completely rehauled their executive team. But guess what? Last week, they got $35 million in new funding.
From you?
Well, from some friends of mine. We don't need to get into all that. I mean, that's not why I'm mentioning it.
Did you come here in your jet?
Gulfstream, of course.
Hovercraft. Yes. You need that in Atlanta.
That's right.
But Amari, if you're listening, we're rooting for you, buddy. So, but that's just an example. I mean, there's a company that was having trouble, you know, not just 2 years ago, and because of this tight, I mean, it's still valuable out there. There's still people looking to invest in this.
And if you remember when Amari was here with us, he talked about one of their latest big wins, which was a big investment from Comcast. So it's definitely
exactly
money is going after. Yeah. Whoever can help us solve this capacity crunch.
And what's causing this? I mean, we talked about, you know, booming economy. People are ordering, you know, Amazon, Alibaba, all over the world, certainly in the U.S. But to go a lever deep, one of the things that's affecting it, we touched on a little bit at our last episode, was that now the ELD rules for truckers are implemented, you know. And so that limits the time on the road for these truckers. And there's good reasons for it. It's to increase their health and safety.
Right.
But that means that they're not on the road. A lot of them used to just overextend themselves just because they'd get paid another $300,000, $500,000 to do so. You know, so it was in their best interest. But there are some companies that are actually making those two issues intersect a little bit. There's a company in Knoxville, Tennessee, keeping it in the southeast, you know.
That's right.
Conexial. And what they do is they provide those ELD devices, but they go a step further. So the ELD devices, they go on each truck. They tell you how much, you know, they tell you hours of service, how much capacity you have, where you're going. So they take that information and put it into an online marketplace where shippers are part of that online marketplace. And they can find the trucker that has just delivered to Charlotte but still has six more hours left on his drive time. And they know that because of the ELD. It's just freight matching technology.
Yep.
And another thing that's cool about that is, you know, we talked about it with Amari last week, that a lot of times these guys get dinged because these drivers will go to pick up a load and it'll take 6 hours of their time. Mm-hmm. Well, if you join this marketplace for Conexio, you have to agree that you have to load within 2 hours. You have to agree before you even join.
Cut down the waste.
Right. Yeah. And so, and if you don't, then you have to pay the driver for that time.
Yep. And that Conexial is, that's Konexial,
that's right?
For our listeners' benefit there.
You know, we talk about the challenges that are coming up with this. It's also providing a lot of opportunity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, for UPS, we have Coyote, which does something very similar to that.
They do.
But also with the speeding up of the supply chain. You're having more frequent loads that are moving, which is creating a need for much more CDL-qualified drivers. Mm-hmm. And it's really not a bad way to make a living if you're not going to pursue a four-year degree.
That's right.
But there's also some things that really need to happen from an infrastructure standpoint. Mm. All of these truckers that are on the road that are now having to follow the rules with rest time don't have a place to stop.
Absolutely.
And we really have a huge need for more truck stops, more areas where the drivers can safely rest. I drove up to Tennessee earlier last week, early in the morning, and the number of on and off ramps that were just lined with tractor trailers because of the required rest time that they can't cook the books anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's something from a legislative standpoint, a infrastructure standpoint, right, that really needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. And you know, I give a shout out to the Atlanta Regional Commission. They've got a freight task force that meets pretty regularly. Daniel Stoddard might be listening. I don't know. But one of the topics that they were tackling and researching and trying to figure out how we can do better is helping truckers find safe places to pull over and to take the necessary breaks. What triggered it was unfortunately in South Carolina a couple of years ago, there was a truck driver that struggled to find a place to pull over, and he chose a place. I don't think it was well lit. It wasn't a secure area, and he was robbed and murdered in South Carolina, tragically. And you know, that's a terrible story to share. But also, just the day in and day out, truckers on average, according to their good work at the freight task force, spend over an hour just trying to find a place, and that's probably on a good day. Mm-hmm. So yeah, huge opportunity. We got to tackle that in the transportation industry. So Will, we're talking about tightening markets, right?
Yeah.
Recycling. Speaking of tightening markets, what's going on in the recycling world?
Well, this year has seen an upheaval in the world of recycling, and we'll touch on how that's really affecting a lot of issues in supply chain as well as just recycling and waste. But the largest import previous to this year, the largest importer of post-consumer recyclables was China. Hmm. Okay, but this year they decided they do not want foreign garbage in their country anymore. So they instituted a waste import ban on 24 different kinds of solid waste, and that went into effect in January. So, and not only that, but it's also about contamination. Now their new contamination standard is only 0.5%, and that went into effect in March. So even more restrictions might be coming, and that's made it a really tough time for the U.S. recycling industry as we try to deal with the now and the future. I mean, this isn't another issue that isn't going away. I mean, an example is that 31% of U.S. scrap exports worth a total of $5.6 billion were sent to China last year. So that's been cut, and it was cheap for recycling collectors to send that scrap to China because, and this is important, the ocean carriers that would take that recycling over there, then they were providing, similar to the trucking that we talked about earlier, they were providing backhaul to ship electronics and, you know, all kinds of different stuff from China to come back. So that has been reduced significantly because of this reduction. So, and now these companies are looking to new markets. They're looking for Malaysia, India, you know, but those aren't as sophisticated. You know, they're not quite as developed, these, you know, as far as their logistics and their supply chains. So
it's really interesting. Each decision made upstream or downstream always has some kind of impact on the end-to-end supply chain. And one other thing, as you were sharing your pre-show notes on recycling, we were at the Home Depot Return Center last week, and Frank Killoran, with Rubicon Global, gave a great overview. So a lot of what the information you're sharing about the ever-changing, fast-changing world of recycling. But according to the EPA, I Googled this over the weekend, the rate of Americans that recycle has tripled in the last 30 years.
Right.
That's a good thing, right? But as of 2017, it was still at only 34%.
Right.
And so one of the things Frank shared, a huge recycling advocate and evangelist, to steal your phrase there, but he was talking about how he's seven neighbors live in his neighborhood, and he's the only recycler. So one in seven, which is a terrible rate, right? And that illustrates the challenge we have, the mindset. Americans, everyone, but Americans in general, have to embrace even more and act on it, take action.
That's
right.
And we'll actually get into that here because it's going to end up affecting us because obviously it gets more expensive for these guys to send this recycling over. Mm. Where does that cost come? It comes down to the consumer as far as the people that want to recycle. So so the problem is that some of these cities and towns, and you've seen, you know, Rubicon, as you mentioned, they actually have a contract with the city of Atlanta to help optimize the recycling here with their application. But some cities and towns could decide that recycling services is going to be too expensive because of all of these issues.
Let me apologize to any Frank's neighbors I may have unfortunately spotlighted.
Hey,
we're challenging Frank's neighbors. All we need to go 7-for-7 right there. But real quick, you're talking about the city of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Frank mentioned that the trash truck is one of the few vehicles in the country that is in every neighborhood on a weekly basis.
That's right.
And so they're collecting a lot of data, I think.
Roving data centers.
Wow.
That's what we call them over there.
That's what I like.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
But you've already seen that in Atlanta. I mean, you can't recycle glass anymore. You know, you have to take it to a center yourself. There's plenty of convenient options. I mean, I go to DeKalb Farmers Market. That's right around the street. But I still have to go do it instead of just putting the stuff out. But as you talked about, it's not only that we need more people recycling, we need more people recycling correctly.
That's right.
So not to get preachy here on Supply Chain Radio.
Well, hey, you're an evangelist.
Right. I mean, I did say that on it. But it's about contamination. It's about doing it the right way, you know, and there's little things that we can do, you know, not recycling a cheesed up pizza box. Like that's a problem. Somebody's got to deal with that. Mm. You know, rinsing out containers, throwing away plastic bags. Those are things that get caught up in the machinery of these processing centers. But and as you mentioned, Rubicon, they earlier in this year, trying to get ahead of some of this stuff, they released the Rubicon Method, which is a best practices guide for businesses. Mm-hmm. So and you can find that by simply Googling Rubicon Method. But it's really simple stuff. I mean, a lot of it is common sense stuff, but it's, you know, placing side-by-side bin stations with picture-based signage, just making sure you're throwing stuff in the right places, you know, colored liners, and just eliminating waste from the very start, you know, food, disposable tableware, that kind of stuff.
And real quick, before we transition, how can folks find out more information on Rubicon?
Oh, RubiconGlobal.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And their fearless leader, one of their fearless leaders, I need another cup of coffee, my 18th, was on a women's panel at the Georgia Logistics Summit. Did a great job. She was our cleanup hitter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Elaine. Yes, she was on. And yes, indeed. But
we enjoyed that. Yeah. So no shortage of topics. And then again, those are just some of the things I know in Supply Chain Now. So thank you, Ben and Will, as always.
Absolutely.
All right. So want to introduce our first guest today. On Supply Chain Now Radio, we welcome Tandria Bellamy, VP of Industrial Engineering at UPS Global Logistics and Distribution. Good morning again.
Good morning again.
Thanks for taking time out of your really busy schedule. I'm sure you have three plates full back at the office. So we can talk about a lot of different things with Tandria and her experience and leadership and all. But one of the things that really was tip of the tongue as we extended the invite for her to join us was some conversations that really were started on our end from her blog article, Why I'm No Hidden Figure, which dives into a lot of things. But you know, how can we get more women into the field of engineering? And then as we're going to hear from Tandria, how can we keep them in the field of engineering? So good morning. First off, I think, Tandria, you know, how long have you been at UPS and what do you do for the industry behemoth that is UPS?
I have been with UPS 32 years today.
Wow.
Wow.
Today.
Okay.
Today is my UPS anniversary. And
it's pretty unbelievable.
It's great.
I know.
It is great. You know, once you're in, it gets in your blood. Mm. Great organization. And I've had an opportunity to do a lot of things. And that's helped. Even though I've been with the company for 32 years, I've never done the same job more than 3 years in a row.
Okay.
Which is phenomenal from an exposure standpoint. You get to meet a lot of different people, but see how UPS impacts global commerce in many, many, many different ways. Even though I'm listed as the VP of Engineering for Global Logistics and Distribution, I've had another career change within UPS, and I'm currently on our automation and innovation team, which is actively sourcing for autonomous technologies that's going to help us move forward. You know, we've talked a lot about the speeding up of the supply chain. The huge emphasis on reducing costs. Mm. And definitely autonomous technologies will allow us to do both things.
And UPS, of course, headquartered right here in Atlanta, huge, the industry leader in getting stuff moved and getting stuff done and supply chain. We talked last show about the big project where they are looking to, I think it was a million or a billion data points on a weekly basis in terms of determining where parcels are going and to your point, automating and making it even more efficient.
You know, you talked about the garbage trucks being on every street every week. Well, guess what? We're on every street every day. So, and it is about having an understanding of how we conduct business, because that's going to help the world conduct business better.
That's right.
And then as you start moving into smart cities, that information becomes even more important to ensure that we're just doing it and not only the most cost-effective manner, but the most sustainable manner. Mm. Protecting the environment is huge for us. And every one of those data points helps us to do business in a better way.
Yep. So, you of course, engineering has been a big part of your 32 years with UPS. Early on, though, what first nudged you into that direction?
Like most young engineers, I was good at math and science. Had a phenomenal high school counselor who actually got me a internship while I was still in high school. And I got an opportunity to, and I won't mention the company, but I got an opportunity to do an internship my junior and senior year at high school at a defense industry company. I had an opportunity to work with engineers, got relegated to some menial tasks, but got an opportunity to work with engineers and saw that they really believed if it's not broke, don't fix it. Mm. There was just an air of complacency. So when I transitioned to UPS and I started working there in college, to see how critically dissatisfied they were with everything. It, from an industrial engineering standpoint, it's just a huge playground because nothing is ever good enough. Mm. And I mean that in the best way.
Sure.
How do we make it better? How do we make it safer for our people? How do we improve service levels for our customers? It's all about how you get better. And that really sparked the love of industrial engineering.
And that constructive dissatisfaction is a yes, critical mantra at UPS, right?
Absolutely, positively.
So let's dive in on the number side of this challenge first, right? You mentioned in again, a great blog article that really does a good job illustrating the challenges and also sharing some tips for how we can all help move the needle. So you mentioned in the article, first off, women make up less than a quarter of the STEM workforce, which surprisingly, I think most folks would be surprised, hasn't changed much in the last few decades.
It really hasn't. And even though there's been a lot of outreach, a lot of things that's being done at the elementary, junior high, secondary school level to get women involved, entering college, we do a pretty good job of bringing women into engineering. We do a really lousy job of keeping them.
Yep.
Latest research has shown about 40% of the women engineers end up leaving the field for various reasons. And one of the reasons that's always mentioned is not seeing other women in engineering leadership positions. So it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. If our women don't stay and get into leadership roles to be good role models, well, then the women don't see them there, and they tend to not stay.
Sure.
Another thing that's talked about is the socialization. Mm. Engineers have an air of arrogance about them. You know, we go on, and we're on campus, and along with the medical students, we're kind of the top of the pecking order as far as, oh, wow, that's a really hard major. So you come in and you have almost a socialization of, yes, you are the top-notch students.
Right.
You're a little bit better than. And always extremely competitive. So there's a lot of group work that goes on. Mm. And, you know, you guys are blessed with testosterone. We don't have that. So you do go after things a lot more aggressively. So you have women who get into group situations a lot of times as one female and four or five males, and that getting relegated to managing the project, to keeping the books, to not being the one that's out in front, establishing design. Whoa, that got stuck. Establishing the design.
Welcome to the party.
Yes. Pushing the group.
Right.
And sometimes begrudgingly, sometimes willingly take on that role.
Right.
And that tends to continue.
Yes.
I've done a lot of reading because keeping women in engineering is extremely important to me. And that, unfortunately, plays itself out when women get into internships in companies. The strongest rise to the top. And if you're not going to be out front, if you're not going to push being very aggressive, sometimes, again, you're relegated to a lesser role, which creates a lot of dissatisfaction.
Ripple effect, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So from a company standpoint, it's just so important that the leaders in the business, the managers in the groups, whoever is set up to be the mentors of the new engineers coming in, that they're really paying attention to the environment, that they're making sure that the environment is very welcoming for everybody, whether they have different styles of how they present their information, just appreciating the diversity of thought. Yep. That comes is extremely important, so that
it's not just a cliche. It's really huge impact, right? When you have a team of folks that are looking at a problem or a challenge or an issue from these different points of perspective, right? I mean, I think diversity is a word oftentimes it's just kind of thrown into a conversation, and you know, you see eyes rolling and stuff, but you've got to really understand the positive impact of having, you know, a different groups of people with different perspective around the table, right?
Different perspectives and different experiences. Mm. I'll give you a really dumb example.
You're on my level then. You're
on
my
Scott,
level.
Come on.
You got to dumb it down for Scott just a little
right.
bit.
We were talking about a service issue. And the data points made absolutely no sense because we had an account number that was entering the system in several different places. So the gentleman in the group all said, somebody's cheating. I looked at the account. The account was one of the footwear places. It was either Shoe Carnival or Famous Footwear. And immediately I knew what it was. Hey, if I go in a Shoe Carnival anywhere and they don't have the size, they'll ship it from someplace else. Mm. And they're using that account number. Well, if you're not doing the shoe shopping for the family, that doesn't even become a part of your thought process.
That's true.
So understanding that people can contribute to very significant problems in very different ways and allowing all of those voices to be heard is really critical.
Yep. So want to make sure. So women make up 20% of engineering graduates, but nearly 40% of the women, as you shared, who earn engineering degrees either quit or never even enter the profession. So we got to fight not only to get them into the field, but to keep them, as you mentioned. We talked about early exposure.
Yes.
We talked about making sure there's an inviting corporate culture. Let's talk about freedom and flexibility and how important that is to, you know, again, getting women into the field and keeping them.
You know, we shouldn't even have to talk about flexibility in our connected digital age.
That's true.
There's so much of the problem solving. There's so much of the work. There's so much of the customer contacts that can be done from anywhere that demanding that someone is at a desk, you know, from 8 to 5, 6 or 7, as we continue to do more with less every day, just really isn't practical and really doesn't serve the organizations well. Allowing that flexibility because, for the most part, women are the caregivers, whether it's for their children or their parents, as we're starting to have that generation. You know, we're sandwiched in the middle of taking care of our family on both ends. Having that flexibility where you can do both, that you can take care of your family and take care of the business, is hugely important. Mm. And companies won't lose anything because of it. They're going to get a much more engaged employee, a much more engaged engineer, because they're not constantly worried about something else as they're doing their job.
Hmm. You know, we could dedicate a 3 hour long show to right. And then we still, that wouldn't do it justice on this subject matter. But as we kind of wrap up this segment, Tandria, you mentioned in the pre-show, the warm-up session, some of the organizations out there, SWE and NSBE,
yes.
That are great resources for all and anyone, but in particular women engineers, right?
Yes. SWE, the Society of Women Engineers, does a great job of bringing women engineers together, but at their chapter meetings, always bringing in women who are in the profession that can help share some of those tips and tricks for surviving.
And so one final question. Again, appreciate your service and leadership on our APICS Atlanta Executive Advisory Board, which is now, I think, in year three. What can industry associations, whether it's APICS or SWE or CSCMP or any of our
Women
friends,
in Technology.
Women in Technology,
one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
What can they do to help move the needle?
We need those organizations to be a voice saying these are the industry or these are the concerns. These are the things that can be done to help address those concerns. We need that voice to be really loud saying, guess what? It's really okay that men and women are different. However, they contribute equally. And don't force everyone into the same box. Having a organization that's standing behind that not only really can help heighten awareness for the companies, but can give a voice to some women who may be considering changing industries because of it.
Great point. You know, we stood up the Gender Gap Task Force with APICS Atlanta a couple of years ago and led by another UPSer, Elba Pareja Gallagher, does great work.
Friend of the 50. Show.
Yeah, big friend of the show. And we'll have Elba on in a couple of weeks. But really appreciate, again, appreciate what you do. We need to have you back, and we'll have a deeper conversation around, you know, peeling the layers of this onion back. But thanks for joining us today, Tandria Bellamy with UPS.
Thanks so much for having me.
And don't go anywhere. We're gonna have you chime in on something after we talk with our next guest, Gail Moore. So up next today on Supply Chain Now Radio, we welcome Gail Moore, co-owner and manager of Custom Plastics and More, which again is a plastic fabricator located in Winston, Georgia. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Scott.
Now, Winston, west of Douglasville and east of Villarica.
Yes.
Is that right?
Exactly.
Just off I-20, just north of I-20. As we were talking in the warm-up session, Gail never gets any sleep. She can't. She is incredibly engaged in the industry and community, and we could talk about a multi-hour show. A couple things. She has several roles with industry associations, including serving as Northwest Chapter Director of the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, right? Great friend of the show there. Gail is fully engaged with the local school system, advisory board member with the Douglas County School System, CTAE. Which stands for?
Career Technical Agricultural Education.
Okay. If we have anything in supply chain, we have acronyms, right? And, you know, Gail also has helped grow our Supply Chain 101 program. She actually put it in a headlock and pulled it out to Douglas County earlier this year where we had, I believe, four sessions, right? We had like 30 volunteers out there. We led an invasion of one of the local elementary schools. And really, all of this is just the tip of the iceberg. Gail it's not lip service when it comes to Gail getting involved in industry and community. So thanks for all that you do, Gail.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about first custom plastics and more. So how do you help your customers?
We provide custom sheet plastic product. So we start with a drawing, usually provided by that company of a particular part that they need. Generally, it's not something that requires a mold being made. It's not going to be high volume.
Mm-hmm.
And then we enter the picture to provide that small run custom product.
So it sounds like there's lots of hands-on in helping the customers ensure manufacturability or...
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any observation, 2018, any observations from an industry standpoint?
Other than a lot more competition because every shops are gearing back up. A lot fell by the wayside in the Great Recession. We did hang on, and so we're
fighting a good fight.
Fighting the good fight.
And consumers are getting more and more demanding, right? And knowledgeable,
exactly.
Right? All the information's at their fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about awareness, industry awareness. You know, clearly the main North Star behind Supply Chain 101 is planting these seeds with elementary school students, right? And that's that.
Yes.
You're involved in a lot of different efforts, similar efforts there. So yes. How important is educating these kids on the scope, diversity, opportunities in the manufacturing industry?
Well, I think in my brush this earlier this year with bringing that out, that our imperative right now is educating the educators because they are coming from that four-year background and a lot of times even going into then getting higher degrees, which further removes them from anything going along down in the industrial park. They're clueless,
right.
Don't know they're there. A lot of communities don't even have any idea that they have industrial parks. Truly.
And you know, we laugh because it is funny, but really we wonder, we sit back and we have this skills gap, talk about cliches, but it's very real. And we wonder why we have this skills gap.
Yep.
To your point, you know, how many families or how many parents or how many educators are pulling kids or making them aware of what goes on in these industry parks, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of been, and that's why I think my attraction to Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, because we are out there on the front lines, educating people, talking to other manufacturers, and then trying to encourage them to get the conversation out, because you are prone to stay behind your dock door, get the work done. You got to get the product out, the order complete, customer satisfied, and it's all revenue driven. But it's so important to come outside that door.
Well, I think with you and Tandria here together, I think it really shows supply chain folks, manufacturing folks are very action-oriented. They see a challenge, and then we're going to figure out how to wrap our head around it and move the needle. So it's neat to have a manufacturer that gets the skills gap, that's doing a lot of things to fight it. We talked about the awareness, how important that is. Talk about the need to amplify this message. I mean, you know, and how do we do that?
Good question. I think for our county, I can only speak to where I come from personally in Douglas County, the enthusiasm, support, and dedication that our Economic Development Authority has, Chris Pumphrey and Breezy Strayton, run that out there. And I've gotten come alongside shoulder to shoulder with them, and they welcome the input and people coming alongside them to help. But they see the need because they hear from the local companies and manufacturers, the HVAC people, the welding companies. They hear the need day in and day out. We can't hire, we can't find people.
Right.
They get on or they might work to the first paycheck. Bye-bye. That is not going to work. It's so costly to have that turnover. That's where we come in. We formed with the CTAE this year to, of course, bring out Supply Chain 101, which huge success. That was in our STEM, elementary STEM.
And we'll be back.
Yep. I know. I'm so excited. But then we also took it on a Manufacturing Appreciation Week that the state holds every year to actually do a day industry tours with 125 high school seniors that have no path. They've got no decision made about what they're going to do with, I think we were a month and a half out from graduation.
Wow. And they,
right.
So that was huge. That was really kind of my aha moment that we can get in front of these kids and reach them and have the conversation.
It connects back a little bit what Tandria was saying, honestly, is that, you know, with young kids, with women, that to really expose them to it at a very young age, or really at any age, you know, to show some of the possibilities that they can have, I mean, it's invaluable. Yep. I mean, you know, there's schools, you know, I live over kind of on the east side, and there's a great school over there that is so focused on STEM from the very beginning, you know, Robotics Day. And, you know, it's just tremendous. Mm-hmm. Drew Charter School is the school I'm thinking of. And my children used to go there, and they immediately, you know, from first grade on, they started talking about robotics and engineering.
Love it.
That's so cool. Yeah. I forgot to mention this in my notes coming up. We have a Google facility in Douglas County, and every year they sponsor the Gravity Games,
awesome.
Which then brings in the schools to form a team, build their little cart, and then race. And it's an all-day fun event. The whole community comes out, but not enough.
So what's the sidebar question here. The mix of on the Gravity Games, is there 50-50 male, female? I mean, how hard has it been to get females engaged into those types of things?
I would say from what I have seen, it's probably more of the male ratio. But I know we several companies came together to sponsor a team 2 years ago, and we had half female, half male
okay.
on our team.
Hey,
progress.
Progress, yeah. Huge opportunity that. It probably sounds like we beat a dead horse on this quote, but Kathleen Edge with Southwire, right? Gail mentioned the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance. We have the summit coming up here in October.
October 10th.
Jason Moss, the hardest working man in the manufacturing industry. But Kathleen Edge is a leader with Southwire. She came out and was one of our keynotes a couple years ago, and she mentioned, we can't begin to attack the skills gap if we don't first attack the gender gap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it illustrates just how big of a challenge and opportunity it is.
Yeah. We're way behind in having the dialogue, which
That's
is
right.
why it's so important
yeah.
to have venues like this and then to take it back to your community and
That's
keep
right.
talking.
That's right. And you use this term vaster broadcasting, which I took to mean, you know, broader, bigger, and instead of targeting and taking a the rifle approach to getting the message out.
Yep.
We want to blast it, right?
Love it.
Yeah. Far and wide.
Which then just segues into the need for every person to take on that challenge. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't just be that company or that lead. Every person can take on that challenge. We have such opportunity on social media platforms nowadays to reach so many people, and that's been kind of my mission, is to build my voice, particularly on LinkedIn, that because you do kind of create a loyal following. And the ones that are going to sit there, if they're going to carve out time in their day to sit down and peruse LinkedIn, they want valuable input.
That's right.
It's not another ad or, you know, another funny video.
Yeah.
Let's have valuable content there.
Were you going to?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, and I completely agree on the LinkedIn front. I think it's more qualified with folks that you're looking for, as opposed to if you put it on Facebook, you never know what you're going to get back sometimes. So no offense to Facebook.
The bots. That's right. We love Facebook around here.
Yeah.
Big investment out in Newton County. So we'd let off this segment talking about your community and industry involvement. You clearly, in my conversations and our collaboration together, you take that as a responsibility. You know, speak to that. Why are you so involved?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I shared with you that so many people go about their day to day or their involvement in their company. It's I'm going to give you so much, but I want to be on the take side. That mentality that we always have is going to be a give and take. And I want to see that segue over to give and grow.
Because give and grow.
Give and grow. The more...
T-shirt.
Apex logo. because I've seen that over and over. And it's not about me professionally. I do grow professionally, or even about custom plastics and more growing. If my community is lifted up, then it's all a rising tide lifts all boats, right? I mean, and that's not a cliche. It's true.
Very true. Very true. And it's a bigger picture approach.
Yes.
And I think, and not just in this, not, I don't want to bash any generation. The M word gets bashed all the time. And you know, my wife said this, that we all have a little bit of millennial in us, right? Mm-hmm. And these generalizations just doesn't help. The conversation doesn't help anybody. But I think a lot of folks, you know, I've been involved as a volunteer with Apex for about 12 or 13 years now, and there's a lot of folks that will take that short term here now. You know, they're going to give a little bit, but they expect a return this week or same day. And really, to your point of give and grow, you've got to give and give and give. You do the right things in the bigger picture, and you'll get what you're looking for. And so, and I imagine with all of what you do in the community, that you know, you've had some business conversations.
Oh, absolutely, it's been phenomenal. That just from getting out and being exposed to all the different industry associations, going on the plant tours, meeting people, taking opportunity to network and learn about others, and take an interest. It's not just exchanging a business card. It's making the effort to hook up on LinkedIn, connect, and then stay informed about what they've got going on, because I've been able to make connections maybe even 2 years down the road. I'll cross paths with someone. I really need an expert, or I need an answer in this genre. I can go back to my connections and make that happen.
Mm. Well, and that is not lip service. I've networked with Gail through the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance and APIX and these projects for a number of years, including, you mentioned, the Georgia Manufacturing Appreciation Week. Yeah. They put on a great banquet each year, and they bring they have a drawing contest for elementary students, right? Mm-hmm. And they basically challenge students with, you know, what does manufacturing in Georgia mean?
Right. Or your community.
Yeah, in your community. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, I know to get that wrong somewhere. But but then they bring the kids out, and they're networking and rubbing elbows with all the manufacturing companies who bring all their employers out. Well, just a great idea. And y'all can fact check me if you want, but Gus Whalen, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but he was a previous president of the APIX Atlanta chapter. It was his idea 20-something years ago, maybe 25 years ago, to have a manufacturing appreciation week. And he used to give the invocation every lead off of the lunch. Yep. Cool. So, Gail, as we wrap up this segment, how can folks find out more about Custom Plastics and more?
We have a vibrant website. Be glad to have you come visit that or call me. My cell phone is posted. Find me on LinkedIn. More than glad to connect at any time. And also check out Women in Manufacturing. We have an active Georgia chapter here now with that organization, which is all about elevating and supporting women in that industry.
Absolutely. So a couple things there. Check out their website at Custom Plastics and More, and that's spelled out .com, Custom Plastics and More .com. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have Allison Giddens with Women in Manufacturing at some point. She like both of y'all, she has several full plates. She was out at the VEO on Saturday as well, her and her husband Matt. And we look forward to having her join us in one of our upcoming broadcasts. So, Gail Moore, thank you very much for joining us, and thanks for all that you do.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to wrap up the show in this final segment, and we're going to talk about some of our upcoming guests, some of the upcoming events here in the hashtag Supply Chain City. So next up on Supply Chain Now Radio, we're going to be featuring John McKee with Sprint. John's going to be talking about the 5G expansion into the city and the impact that's going to have on manufacturing and the supply chain world. We're going to have a surprise guest from the Kimberly-Clark supply chain team, right, Ben?
We are. It's TBD on exactly who that is, but it will be from their supply chain team there. So looking forward to that.
Definitely. And this is going to be on Friday, September 7th. Our talented co-host Ben Harris and Will Haraway will be joining us once again. Supply Chain City will be the theme of that show again, which we love. Other upcoming events, webinars galore. If we've done anything, you know, Tandria mentioned this digital age. Well, you know, getting folks to come out to events is probably more challenging than I've ever seen it in my, you know, career here in Atlanta. So we have done a lot of webinars, and it's really resonated because folks can grab their turkey sandwich and tune in over lunch hour and learn best practices and whatnot. So upcoming sessions, how to become a talent magnet. This week, which is actually coming tomorrow, with our APIX Atlanta 2018 Company of the Year, which is Tosca, which is a fascinating company, supply chain super competitor. We also have negotiating best practices this week and a labor market update by our friends at ProLogistics next week. ProLogistics is part of Employer Bridge, which is one of the largest staffing companies based right here in Atlanta as well. And those three webinars are just the next couple weeks. Will, we've got a webinar with Greg White coming up in September, right?
We're talking millennials.
Absolutely.
Right there.
Absolutely. And Greg
is... How to engage them. Yes, indeed.
$1 million question. Multi-million dollar question, right? Looking forward to that in September. One other event, well, two other events, because I want to talk about the Georgia Manufacturing Summit, which is going to be held in October. And I should have made me a note for the date. Do you have that, Gail?
10th.
October 10th.
Gail is on it.
Wednesday.
Thank you. Save me.
Gail is on it.
October 10th. And you can learn more information on that. We've got the president of Gulfstream and a senior leader with Thrush Aircraft. Aerospace is going to be the theme. And you can find out more information at GeorgiaManufacturingAlliance.com on that all-day event. Great event. And then one last event on my end, and Will and Ben, I want to pick mm-hmm. your brain here for a second, but we are finalizing details for an APEX, y'all stay with me, it's a mouthful, APEX Regional Supply Chain Leadership Forum. Got to come up with an acronym for that one. October 19th and 20th, it's going to be held at Georgia Tech. Our good friend Tim Brown, who leads the Georgia Tech Supply Chain Logistics Institute, we're going to be having hosting supply chain leaders from across the Southeast, APEX, CSCMP, other associations for sure. We have Elba Preha Gallagher, who's going to be one of our keynotes there. We're going to have Amir Ganad speak about leadership there. We're also going to have Mike Wasson with Tosca, talking talent, all confirmed as keynote speakers. So more information on that can be found at apexatlanta.org. So Will and Ben, what's on your radar?
A good bit, actually. Will, you want me to go first?
You go first.
All right, man. All right. Well, we got the next Supply Chain Leadership Council meeting for the Metro Atlanta Chamber is Wednesday, actually this week, August 22nd, from 7:30 to 9 in the morning at the Metro Atlanta Chamber, 34th floor, 191 Peachtree Northeast. We're thrilled to have Matt Davis, Managing Vice President at Supply Chain Management World, or SCM World, as it's better called. It's a Gartner community. Which is the cross-industry leading learning community powered by the world's most influential supply chain practitioners. Mm. So very, very excited about Matt Davis. Matt will be sharing exciting and somewhat surprising results, actually, from Supply Chain Management's most recent global supply chain survey. So very cool
big
content
deal
there. Also joining us on the same for the same meeting there will be John Moore. He is worldwide segment leader for IBM Watson Supply Chain. So he's going to be talking through artificial intelligence, AI, as it's better called, being used to provide better, greater visibility, transparency, and insight in supply chain data and processes. So, again, 7:30 in the morning on Wednesday this week. Hope to see you there. Obviously, everybody at the table here would love to extend a personal invite to you guys, but everybody out there in the community as well, shoot me an email, or I would love to see you there. Additionally, got a couple other events.
And Ben, real quick, your email or how? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
B. Harris at MACOC.com. B. Harris at Metro Atlanta Chamber of
Commerce.com. Perfect.
Next up, CSCMP Edge, their global conference is actually coming up October 1st and 2nd. That is in Nashville, Tennessee. I am actually moderating a panel discussion there and leading a primetime panel on supply chain talent of the future. So it seems like we've said that probably 50 different ways on this right. this podcast. So very exciting, and it's so timely because I feel like we end up talking about that almost every time on this show because it's just such an important topic. And most of the people that will be on the panel actually will be folks from the Atlanta area, from most of the manufacturing community here. So exciting to have those practitioners there at the table, and would love to see everybody there at CSCMP. If you're planning on going to the annual conference, it's going to be a great primetime event there on the first day. I think they're expecting 3,500 attendees roughly, and hopefully, you know, we'll have, you know, 200 or 300 attendees for that session. So very exciting there, especially to shine a light on Supply Chain City.
Well, and let's talk about a very important, the most important topic that will be discussed, and that's Hattie B's hot chicken in Nashville. I'm going to tell y'all a little tip.
It is here now.
My wife, we're talking about when we're going to target it. But if you're going to Nashville, here's a tip. You'll thank me later. Hit up Hattie B's about 4:35 p.m. Mm-hmm. There will be no wait. If you hit it up any time outside of that time frame, literally the line wraps around the corner. So, Ben, bring me back some hot chicken, would you?
I'll see what I can do, Scott. If not, you know, maybe go over to Little Five and pick you up some.
There
from
we
there,
go. But hey, spotlighting the hot critical issues of the day here on Supply Chain Now Radio.
Indeed. One more. The Southern Automotive Conference is coming to Atlanta as well. It's October 3rd through the 5th. And the Metro Atlanta Chamber is sponsoring, along with our partners at the state, Georgia Power, and others. This is the first time in its 11-year tradition it's actually being hosted in Atlanta. So with a lot of the automotive presence here in the Southeast, it's a big deal for us to get this conference. And that's actually going to be out at the Atlanta Battery. So
awesome.
Definitely mark your calendars there.
Well, and Ben, we've talked about getting the fine folks of APEX in Chicago and bringing that international conference here. So hopefully we'll make some progress there.
That was a bummer this year that it's the same time as the national APEX conference.
Yeah, we've got to do some supply chain planning.
I know. If all the chapters could get along as well as the Atlanta chapters, we'd be all right, right, Scott?
That's right. That's right. Good point. So, Will, what's on your radar?
Well, first of all, for the at the Georgia Tech, we're going live, right? On stage, are we going to do a live taping at that?
That's
show?
The plan. That's the I that like is that. The plan. I mean, we got a lot to work out.
We've got a lot of fans that want to see this go on. The Southern Supply Chain guy.
You use that term very loose, right?
Hey, I'm following the Twitters. They want to.
Is that what they're saying? Do we sound like just giant rednecks?
Well. Sophisticated.
Right? Yes. Sophisticated.
There you go. Sophisticated. Right. There you go.
But yeah, I love some of the events. I'm attending some of those that Ben mentioned. I'm excited about that. But one, since I had Tandria and Gail here together, I wanted to bring up was the MIT Enterprise Forum, which is coming up September 27th. And it's going to be talking about 3D printing. You've got your custom plastics. Mm-hmm. You've got your, you know, UPS innovative department head right here. And they have some really interesting folks there. Alexander Lee from Applied Manufacturing at Delta Airlines Tech Operations. Mm-hmm. You may know him, Tandria. Rick Smith, founder and senior advisor at Fast Radius, which is a UPS partner, as we both know. Jonathan Goldman, principal at Georgia Tech Venture Lab. So that'll be, I know we talked about that in our last episode, but that'll be really interesting to hear. I mean, obviously custom plastics, you know, that's a major part of what has been part of the innovation with 3D printing this year.
Mm. Well, so no shortage of activities to plug into the Supply Chain City, hashtag Supply Chain City here. Atlanta, Georgia, supply chain capital of the country. We were promoted, Ben. I don't know. Did we talk about that?
You know, we've been, it's gone global. It's, you know, the biggest in the world. You know, let's go universe.
Absolutely.
You
know,
let's go beyond. So.
We are setting the bar. Well, again, want to thank our co-hosts and our guests, Gail Moore with Custom Plastics and More, Tandria Bellamy with UPS, Ben Harris with the Metro Atlanta Chamber, and Will Hareway with Backbeat Marketing. Hope you all have a great week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Apex Atlanta, and let's not forget about Talent Stream. We bank certified recruiting and staffing firm that specializes in helping organizations find top talent in the engineering, manufacturing, and supply chain space. For more information about Apex, you can find us at apexatlanta.org. We've been serving the Atlanta community for almost 60 years. And for more information about Talent Stream, check us out at talentstreamstaffing.com. And with that said, Katie, what did we miss?
Nothing. That was a great show, guys.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Learned so much. And, yeah, we're excited to see you guys next time on Supply Chain Now Radio.